WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
A couple of years ago, Wayne Wang, the director of Chan is Missing and the Joy Luck Club, read a story by my guest Paul Auster about a cigar store owner. Wang asked Auster to expand the story into a screenplay. The result was this year's movie, Smoke. After Smoke was completed, writer Paul Auster, director Wayne Wang, actor Harvey Keitel, and several other actors from the film stayed on the set to improvise a film called Blue in the Face, which opened nationally last week. I spoke with writer Paul Auster last summer and asked him first about Smoke. It centers around a cigar store in Brooklyn, owned by a character named Augie, played by Harvey Keitel. One of his regular customers is a novelist who smokes small cigars, played by William Hurt. In this clip from the film, Hurt is talking to a young man who saved his life. Hurt is telling a story about a Russian soldier and his passion for books and cigarettes.
It's 1942, right? He's caught in Leningrad during the siege. I'm talking about one of the worst moments in human history. 500,000 people died in that one place. And there's Bakhtin, holed up in an apartment, expecting to be killed any day. He has plenty of tobacco, but no paper to roll it in, so he takes the pages of a manuscript he's been working on for 10 years and tears them up to roll his cigarettes.
His only copy.
His only copy. I mean, if you think you're gonna die, what's more important, a good book or a good smoke? So he huffed and he puffed, and little by little he smoked his book.
Paul Auster told me he was more involved in the making of Smoke than screenwriters usually are in their films.
From what I'm told, and I'm really a naive in all this, an innocent, usually the screenwriter will finish his script, hand it over to the director, and then disappear. And that's the last they ever have to do with each other. Somehow or other, Wayne and I became great friends in the process. And when we finally did get the backing for the film, without even discussing it, we just went on working together. We cast the movie together, auditioned actors together, scouted locations together, and just stuck with it right to the end. And after the shooting was over, we were in the editing room together for months and months working on the film. And then we did the music together even. So as you'll see in the front of the film, it says a film by the two of us. And I think it's rather unprecedented these days for a writer and director to collaborate so closely.
After the completion of Smoke, several of the actors stuck around to do an improvised film together called Blue in the Face. How did Blue in the Face get made?
Oh, this was a crazy story. It actually happened early on, even before the filming for Smoke began. Wayne and I rehearsed with all the actors for about a month. People were coming in and working over their parts. And early on, Harvey came in with the characters that I called the OTB men, the guys who hang around the cigar store, Giancarlo Esposito and Steve Jevedon and Jose Zuniga. And the four of them were in there warming up, starting to rehearse their scenes together. And just to get to know each other in their roles, they asked if they could improvise a bit. And of course, there was no problem with that. And they started working together just off the tops of their heads. And it was so funny, so wonderfully vibrant that Wayne and I were laughing our heads off. And it's a kind of burst of enthusiasm. He said, you know, after Smoke is finished, we should make another film. Just go back into the cigar store for a few days and film the four of you and see what happens. So from that core of four people, it expanded little by little by little. And all during the production of Smoke, we were preparing for Blue in the Face. I wrote out situations for all the actors. No dialogue, or just sometimes suggested lines, but two or three pages outlining each scene. And while Wayne was working on the set of Smoke, I was running around town talking to the actors and discussing the scenes, situations, their parts, and we got started on Blue in the Face on a Monday. Smoke finished on a Friday, and by the next Monday, we were doing the other film.
There's a scene early on in Blue in the Face in which a woman's purse is snatched.
Yes.
And Harvey Keitel chases after the teenager, the child, really, who stole the purse, brings the kid and the purse back, delivers the purse to her, and she doesn't want to press charges, and Keitel's really angry. This is one of the scenes that you came up with for the actors to improvise around?
Yes. Actually, it's a true story. It seemed like the quintessential New York story. A woman is walking down the street, and a kid, about 11 years old, snatched her purse and ran away. Down Broadway it was. A man saw this happen and chased after the kid. And after a couple of blocks, caught up with him, dragged him back to the woman, at which point a large crowd had gathered around all this commotion. And he took the purse from the boy, gave it to the woman, and said, "Okay, now let's call the police, have him arrested." And the woman looked at the boy, just a child, and melted and said, "I can't press charges. He's just a baby. I can't send such a young person to jail." And the man got very angry, and he said, "It's people like you who are ruining New York. You won't take responsibility. You know, who's going to teach children a lesson about right and wrong if we don't?" And she said, "I'm sorry, I just can't do it." And he got so angry at her that he ripped the purse out of her hands and turned around and gave it back to the boy and said, "It's yours. Go on, get out of here. Take it." And the kid ran off completely confused and had the purse. So we used that scene to open the film.
Now, there are a lot of actors who do scenes in Blue in the Face. See, Madonna, Roseanne, Lou Reed is there. Mm-hmm. Jim Jarmusch, the director, is there. How did you get them all to participate?
Well, each one was for a slightly different reason. For example, Roseanne had always wanted to work with Wayne on something. And as the project started developing and we decided that we would actually bring in new people and not just confine ourselves to the cast members of Smoke, we called her, and she was delighted and came in like a real trooper and worked very hard.
There's a couple of scenes with Lou Reed, the songwriter and singer, guitarist. And this doesn't seem like an improvised performance. It seems like he's talking about his life. It seems very autobiographical.
Well, it's we did this at the end of the second day of shooting, I remember. And I should say that during that time, in those July days, Wayne got sick. So I had to take over everything. I was directing the film. And Lou is a friend of mine. And for some reason, it occurred to me that he would be very interesting in this film. We didn't know exactly what we were going to do with him, but just plunk him down behind the counter of the cigar store and ask him questions. And that's what I did. I was off camera asking him questions, and he was answering off the top of his head. It's all completely extemporaneous.
"I'm scared in my own apartment. I'm scared 24 hours a day, but not necessarily in New York. I actually feel pretty comfortable in New York. I get scared like in Sweden. You know, it's kind of empty. They're all drunk. Everything works. If you stop at a stoplight and don't turn your engine off, people come over and talk to you about it. You go to the medicine cabinet and open it up, and there'll be a little poster saying, 'In case of suicide, call.' You turn on the TV, there's an ear operation. These things scare me. New York, no."
In the written film, in Smoke, the Harvey Keitel character, the character who is the cigar store owner, is also a photographer. And every day for years, at a certain time in the morning, the same time every morning, he stands on the corner and takes pictures of the corner that his cigar store is on. Same shot every day, but, you know, the cast of characters change, the lighting changes, the weather changes. And he's got, I don't know, like 4,000 of these photographs. I thought that was such an interesting concept. And I wonder what made you think of that as his hobby.
Well, I don't know where it came from. It is a strange thing to do with yourself. But at the same time, I think, how shall I put it? I think this project, this photo project, is really the very heart of the film. And what it's all about at bottom is somehow the dignity of everyday life. You know, the importance of everything that happens in the universe. You know, it's one little corner in Brooklyn, and you think, this is not anywhere, this is nowhere, this is not important. But everything is important, and if you pay attention to it, if you really look at what's in front of your nose, you know, you're living more fully. You're participating in human life and the world around you. And I think in a very almost mystical way, you know, Augie's project has great, great meaning for him and if you think about it, for anybody.
It's funny, you know the movie My Dinner with Andre with Wallace Shawn and Andre Gregory? They're having a debate in part of that film about whether you need to climb the Himalayas to find a larger meaning in life, or whether you can find everything that the world means in your corner cigar store. And I guess your movie is the movie
that's right.
that makes the case for the corner cigar store, literally.
I mean, you can be, you know, Walt Whitman and go all over the world and travel all over America and write your amazing poems, or you can be Emily Dickinson and never leave your room and write your equally amazing poems. There are two approaches to the world, and both are valid.
Which is your approach?
Which is my approach? I think somewhere in between. I mean, I've moved around quite a bit, but at the same time, all my impulses are to sit in one place.
And write.
And write, or look, or think, or just dream my dreams. But so I would say I'm a rather immobile traveler.
Now, I know of at least one extraordinary thing in your family's past, which you found out about, I think, a little late in life. And if I have the story straight, your father's mother shot and killed her husband?
No.
No.
No. No. This was my, let me see, my, did you just say my father's mother?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Oh.
That's true.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, right. This is something I've written about, so I suppose I can talk about it. It was, yeah, a big family secret, and but somehow or other, eventually, over many, many years later, the secret came out, and so it's an important story.
How old were you?
When I heard about this?
Uh-huh.
Oh, in my 20s.
Well, that's pretty old to find out something so dramatic that completely changes the nature of your family.
Yes, yes. Definitely.
Do you know why your grandmother shot your grandfather?
No, not exactly. I mean, I could give you reasons, but I don't know why anyone does anything like that. I mean, there were external reasons. She was acquitted in her trial. No, one can't really explain anything like that, I think.
As a writer, you know, as somebody who spends your life dreaming up stories, and, you know, sometimes pretty dramatic ones, sometimes pretty far-fetched ones, sometimes ones that are almost parables, what was it like to realize that a story of such drama was actually something real that happened in your life?
Well, it is, it's part of your education as a human being, you know, that things happen, and they can happen to you just as easily as to a stranger. And that this is how the world works. I mean, I would say that the most dramatic thing that ever happened to me, the thing that probably made me who I am today and causes me to write the way I do, is that when I was 14 years old, I was on a hike through the woods with kids from a summer camp that I went to, and there was a very big storm in the woods, and the boy standing right next to me was struck by lightning and killed. Bang, just like that. You know, one of my friends. And there it is, you know, zap, a life is taken away. And this is something that I actually witnessed. I mean, the family story is murkier, but this is something I was there to see and experience myself. And that life can end so quickly, that things can change so abruptly and without warning is, you know, an amazing lesson to learn so early.
Oh, I know. And one person will, as a result, become timid and fearful, while another person will develop this kind of like zest for living in the moment.
That's right. That's right. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to respond to things. But it's this kind of event that I continue to meditate upon and try to explore and try to make sense of in one way or another.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Paul Auster wrote the screenplay for the film Smoke and collaborated on the new film Blue in the Face. His latest novel, Mr. Vertigo, is being made into a film. Our interview was recorded last summer. This is Fresh Air.